she recalled an, quote, out-of-body experience, like I was up above, end quote.
Jed Wiley was unwinding at her home in Timaru, nestled on New Zealand's South Island, at around 9:40 p.m. on the 16th of September 2021. She was engrossed in a television show with her husband when they suddenly became aware of a commotion coming from somewhere outside. The unmistakable sound of somebody sobbing echoed from the neighbouring house, followed by a loud thud that sounded like somebody slamming the door. Curiosity got the better of Jade, so she ventured outside and peered through the fence in an effort to figure out the source of the disturbance. Although her view was obscured, she could vaguely make out somebody pacing back and forth and sobbing in the garden next to theirs. Moments later, the unknown person disappeared from the garden. At around the same time, Karen and Brad Cooper, who lived in the same neighbourhood, were alerted to the sound of a man in evident distress. The sounds quickly became louder and louder, and the man appeared to be screaming for help. Karen and Brad went to investigate, and they came across a man out the front of a home in the neighbourhood in a state of despair. He was crying and kept repeating, "Is this really happening?" Timaru is a picturesque port city located on the eastern coast of New Zealand's South Island. With its historic significance as a key port, Timaru plays a vital role in the regional economy, facilitating the export of agricultural products. The surrounding areas are categorised by sheep and dairy farming, which contributes to the city's agricultural heritage. Along the coastline, residents have scenic views of the Pacific Ocean, in particular Caroline Bay, which is a popular beach along a boardwalk that often hosts events. In 2019, Timaru became the new focus for Graham and Lauren Dickison. The couple were from Pretoria in South Africa, where they met back in 2005. Lauren had studied medicine at the University of Cape Town, where she completed her degree in 2004 and became a doctor. Her colleagues and patients were touched by her genuine care, earning her a reputation as a physician who went above and beyond for her patients. Lauren's empathy extended to her profound understanding of depression, and she provided unwavering support through frequent phone calls to those navigating challenging times. In 2005, Lauren completed her rural health practice, where she crossed paths with Graham, an orthopaedic surgeon. The two proved to be a great pair, with Lauren's softer, introverted demeanour complementing Graham's outgoing and extroverted nature. Just a year after they met, the couple were married, and they moved into the Wild Estate, a residential community on the outskirts of the city. Lauren and Graham longed to start a family, but they soon learned that they struggled with fertility problems. Seeking solace and understanding, they found support in South African infertility groups and ultimately opted to pursue IVF. IVF involves the combination of an egg and sperm outside of the body in a laboratory dish, leading to the creation of an embryo that's then transferred into the uterus. Despite Lauren's enduring commitment through 17 arduous rounds of IVF, the pregnancy tests consistently delivered disheartening results. However, in 2013, they finally had their first child, a little baby girl who they named Sarah. Tragically, Sarah's premature birth at 18 weeks resulted in her passing away shortly after delivery. Her death was categorized as a miscarriage due to the early birth, and Lauren was unable to bring Sarah home, which only intensified the couple's heartbreak. The emotional aftermath prompted Lauren to take a step back from her role as a doctor, although she continued to support Graham as a part-time surgical assistant. Despite the couple's grief, they were determined to build a family, they eventually turned to donor eggs when traditional IVF proved unsuccessful. In 2014, their perseverance was rewarded with the birth of a healthy little girl, who they lovingly named Liani. A friend, Natasha LaRue, spoke warmly of the couple, stating, "The nicest person pregnancy could happen to is that woman. She was really just a nice person, she and her husband." In 2018, a new chapter unfolded as Lauren discovered that she was pregnant again, this time with twins. Carla and Maya entered the world in 2019, completing the family unit. After a prolonged wait, Liani, Carla, and Maya became the cherished apples of their parents' eyes. With their blonde hair and bright eyes, the family's joy was shared through numerous photographs posted across social media. The source of their daughter's DNA held no significance to the couple, as Graham fondly recollected. Laura never expressed any feelings that the girls were anything other than hers. In 2019, the Dickerson family set their sights on new beginnings in Timaru, New Zealand. Graham had secured a position at Timaru Hospital, where the family found a rented home on Queen Street, conveniently situated just a stone's throw away from the hospital. However, their plans were temporarily thwarted as the world grappled with the outbreak of COVID-19, causing a delay in their relocation. Finally, in August of 2021, the Dickerson family packed up their belongings and made their journey over to New Zealand. Liani was now 6 years old, while Carla and Maya were two. Liani had assumed the role of a typical big sister, showering Carla and Maya with love and affection. She could often be found holding their hands, cuddling with them, and expressing her deep love for them. Described by her Aunt Betty, Maya had a penchant for collecting and carrying toys in little handbags, earning her the endearing nickname of Little Bag Lady. Carla was described as the brave one among the three girls. She had faced a challenging start in life with a cleft lip. Despite the obstacles, multiple surgeries paved the way for Carla to thrive. Prior to settling into their new home in New Zealand, the Dickerson family underwent a 2-week quarantine at a local hotel. Liani, Carla, and Maya expressed excitement about the quarantine adventure, embracing the prospect of living in a hotel for a while. Lauren and Graham shared in their enthusiasm, regularly updating their Facebook accounts with posts about the unique, yet tough, experience. Graham proudly posted a photograph of their three girls at the airport, clutching a stuffed toy kiwi, with their smiles brimming. Lauren sought some community input and asked for suggestions for schools and quality furniture shops to furnish their new home. However, the quarantine period proved more challenging than anticipated, with the family confined to their hotel room for 14 days. Finally, on the 11th of September, after what felt like an eternity, the family were released from quarantine. With the freedom to explore, they settled into their new house and quickly began transforming it into a warm and inviting home. At the hospital, Graham made friends right away, and their newfound community embraced them, making the Dickerson family feel genuinely welcome. On the 16th of September 2021, 2-year-olds Carla and Maya were excited about their first day at preschool. Their older sister Liani had started Timaru Christian School just the day beforehand. Despite being 6 years old, Liani had experienced limited schooling due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Nonetheless, she approached her first day with confidence, leaving a positive impression on her teacher with her kind nature and friendliness. Are you that friend who loves to indulge yourself in little luxuries? It's perfectly fine. We all do it from time to time. For instance, perhaps you opt for that nearby fancy coffee shop instead of brewing at home. Or maybe you find yourself buying more during a sale. Well, because it's a form of saving money, right? If these scenarios resonate with you, then why compromise when it comes to your health and finding a doctor? That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated, in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Say goodbye to that awkward wait on hold with a receptionist. Once you've found your preferred doctor, just book them right away. And all of these doctors have verified reviews, and they treat almost every condition under the sun. If I knew about ZocDoc when I was on the hunt for a good doctor a few years ago, my life would have been a million times easier. Just go to ZocDoc.com/morbidology and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That is ZocDoc.com/morbidology. ZocDoc.com/morbidology. After school, Lauren picked up the girls and treated them to a visit to the local botanical gardens. As the girls played, a group of girls came up to Lauren and informed her that a boy in the park had taken a photograph of her girls. Concerned, Lauren swiftly gathered her daughters and returned home, leading her to question the decision to move to New Zealand. While New Zealand is typically ranked as the second safest country in the world according to the Global Peace Index, Lauren began to doubt her choice. Safety was one of the primary reasons for the family's move from South Africa. But now, Lauren was having her doubts. She wondered if they had made a mistake in moving halfway across the world. Lauren's apprehension lingered as she prepared dinner for herself and the girls. Graham had a work function that evening, so it would just be the three of them. At about 7 p.m, Graham kissed Lauren and the girls goodbye and set off. He was excited about the opportunity to meet some more of his colleagues and build some connections. Shortly before 10 p.m, Graham quietly returned home, mindful not to disturb the girls who would likely be in bed at that hour. The home, which was usually echoing with the sounds of the television in the living room, was unusually quiet. Wondering about Lauren's whereabouts, Graham made his way to the kitchen, where he found her. He recollected. She looked strange. She looked wobbly, like she wanted to fall over. Graham asked his wife whether she was okay, but she didn't reply. He later recalled, "I realized that there was something strange in her face. It's just a facial expression I haven't seen before." He then asked her what was wrong, and she cryptically replied, "It's too late." Realizing that something was seriously amiss, Graham ran into Liani's bedroom, which was the closest to the kitchen. Liani was tucked up in her bed, but her face was unusually pale, and there was something tied around her neck. Graham rushed to her side, but she was cold to the touch. He then noticed that the thing tied around her neck was a zip tie, which had been pulled tight, cutting off her airflow. Graham shook Liani by her shoulders in a desperate attempt to wake her up, but she was completely motionless. Graham then ran into Carla and Maya's bedroom, where he found them in the same condition. He raced back to the kitchen and retrieved a pair of scissors to cut the zip ties constricting his daughters' necks. Despite his frantic attempts at life-saving measures, it became painfully clear, as Lauren had warned, that it was too late. Liani, Carla, and Maya were gone. Seconds later, Lauren emerged in Liani's bedroom. She slowly moved towards her bed and lay down. Overwhelmed by trauma, Graham fled from the home and urgently alerted his neighbours. He also contacted a colleague and asked them to come over and call police, as he was unfamiliar with the emergency number in New Zealand. Paramedics and police swiftly responded to the call, with constables Alexander Schrader and William Turnbull being the first to arrive. Upon entering the home, they noticed cut cable ties scattered on the floor. Their initial discovery was Lauren, who required immediate attention. Superficial cuts adorned her left forearm, and she had ingested an overdose of tramadol, which explained her disoriented state in the kitchen. Meanwhile, Turnbull continued his search throughout the rest of the home. In the next bedroom, he found Carla and Maya, tucked up in their beds with a stuffed toy. Liani was laying on the floor nearby, having been carried there by her father. All three girls were devoid of any signs of life, and they were pronounced dead. Lauren was escorted into an awaiting ambulance, where she was transferred to Timaru Hospital and reported to be in a stable condition. The next morning, detectives made a public announcement.
The investigation into this tragedy is still in its very early stages, but we can confirm that no one else is being sought in relation to the deaths of the three children.
As news of the triple murder spread across the region, Lauren's parents, Wendy and Malcolm Fox, provided a statement. They said that they were devastated to learn of the tragedy, before adding, "The extended families are in a state of shock as we try to understand what happened. We ask for your prayers and support during this difficult time. We would also request privacy, as we battle to come to terms with what has happened." The South African community in Timaru came out in their droves to offer support for Graham, as an impromptu memorial began to grow outside the home the family had lived in for just a week. People placed down cards of condolences and bouquets of flowers, as well as teddy bears and trinkets. Martin Reineck of the South Africans in Timaru group touched on the collective grief, stating, "Our hearts are breaking for their family back in South Africa and around the world who will wake up to this terrible news." Since the family had just moved to New Zealand, Graham didn't have much of a support network. He had only just started working at the hospital, and all of his family, other than Lauren and the girls, still lived in South Africa. Just the next day, Lauren was charged with the murders of Liani, Maya, and Carla. People across the nation were stunned and horrified by what Lauren had done, and many questioned how a mother could kill her own children. According to the family's friends and former neighbours in South Africa, Lauren adored her children. The family's former caregiver in South Africa, Mandy, commented, "I never saw any fight in that family or anything. We treated each other as family. I was family too. There was nothing wrong." However, those acquainted with the family sensed that there was more to the story. They wondered whether it was the stress of moving to New Zealand, or possibly from being quarantined for so long. Yet, as the old saying goes, appearances can be deceiving. Despite outwardly portraying the image of a perfect mother, Lauren had been grappling with mental health challenges. Her struggles with mental health traced back to her teenage years, marked by issues of anxiety, depression, and perfectionism. School life had proved difficult for Lauren, as she faced challenges in making friends, and the resulting isolation left a lasting impact on her well-being. Following the tragic loss of Sarah, Lauren received a diagnosis of major depressive disorder with an underlying anxiety component, attributed to postpartum depression. She was also diagnosed with intermittent mood disorder, with clinical observations noting her tendency to set high standards for herself. Utilizing her medical background, Lauren began prescribing antidepressants for herself, a practice legally permissible and common in South Africa. Are you ready to dive into the gripping world of true crime with Audible? With Audible's premium free trial, you have access to an extensive library of amazing audiobooks narrated by experts, including all of my own true crime books. With Audible, you can seamlessly fit true crime into your daily routine, whether commuting, working out, or relaxing at home. With multi-platform access and exclusive content, Audible ensures an immersive experience in every true crime tale. Don't forget, Audible also provides access to thousands of podcasts, including Audible Originals. Begin your Audible journey for free today by clicking the link in my show notes and unravel the mysteries that await. Despite her ongoing mental health struggles, Lauren and Graham welcomed their daughter, Liani, into the world. However, Lauren continued to grapple with her mental health, and that affected her parenting. Expressing her difficulty, she confided in friends via text messages. In one, Lauren said that Liani moaned all of the time, and she even made a reference to strangling her. In another, Lauren said, "I'm afraid that one day I will smack her too hard." By the time Liani was 18 months old, Lauren's mental health showed significant improvement. The couple subsequently conceived twins, but Lauren's mental health problems resurfaced. She faced bouts of anxiety attacks and told Graham on two occasions that she could do something to the children. Lauren openly shared her challenges with friends, revealing through text messages that she once screamed at the children so loudly that it left Liani terrified. With the arrival of Carla and Maya, Lauren found herself grappling with the demands of motherhood, feeling stretched and unable to dedicate sufficient time to her eldest daughter. As a perfectionist, she struggled to navigate the chaos of the girls' behaviour, their playfulness, and the energetic running around the house. In an attempt to support her, Graham consistently sent heartfelt messages, reassuring Lauren of her worth as a mother. In one message, he wrote, "You're a wonderful mother. You have beautiful children. You give up so much for the kids. I see it." Despite outward appearances, some of Lauren's closest friends knew the truth about her inner struggles. She had confided in them, expressing her difficulties in coping with motherhood. In one text message, she revealed, "I'm being treated for depression, but even though the medicine works most of the time, I get overwhelmed so easily, and the anxiety gets so bad that I can't eat, sleep, or function properly." Adding to her challenges, Lauren lamented about the unruly behaviour of her children in another message, describing the twins as like terrors for the past 2 days. She said they were engaging in disruptive activities such as screaming, slapping, throwing food, biting, and pushing. Seeking guidance and structure, she mentioned spelling out rules to manage their behaviour. It was shortly after this that Lauren and Graham made the decision to relocate to New Zealand. However, as they prepared for the big move, Lauren found herself grappling once again with her mental health. The onset of the COVID-19 pandemic heightened stress levels, prompting the family to pack up their belongings and temporarily move into Graham's mother's home. They originally intended to stay for a brief 4 or 5 days before flying out to New Zealand, but their plans were disrupted when Lauren's foot operation faced delays. Meanwhile, South Africa was engulfed in serious riots, looting, and political unrest, adding an extra layer of anxiety for Lauren, even though the disturbances were not directly affecting their location. During the pre-flight COVID test, one of the girls tested positive, necessitating a 2-week self-isolation at Graham's mother's home. This extended period of confinement took a toll on Lauren's mental well-being. She was struggling to eat and sleep, and she distanced herself from Graham and the girls. With Graham's increased presence due to the lockdown preventing him from working, Lauren began feeling as though the girls preferred him over her. When Graham recalled the situation, he noted, "She verbalised on multiple occasions that she doesn't seem to think she's a good mother, and I've always reassured her." As the move to New Zealand approached, Lauren made the decision to discontinue her medication. She had concerns that the use of chronic medication might impact their immigration application, considering New Zealand's stringent requirements. Instead, Lauren opted for a lifestyle and health plan to manage her mental health issues, marking the first time she had come off medication in 12 years. She noted improvements in a text message to friends, expressing, The girls are so wonderful now. I haven't cried in a long time, and that big black cloud is going away quickly too. Upon their arrival in New Zealand, Graham perceived a positive change in his wife. While not fully back to being her old self, Lauren appeared to be functioning better. Graham actively sought ways to support her, reaching out to colleagues' wives to provide a sense of community. The family received invitations to social events, including barbecues and dinner invitations, and Graham believed that Lauren's struggles were on the path to resolution. However, the optimistic facade soon shattered. Around the same time, Lauren expressed regret about the move in a text message to a friend, sharing, "I wonder what the hell we did. Everything's so strange here. We're all very restless and emotional." Following Lauren's arrest for the murders of her three daughters, detectives interviewed Graham about her mental health struggles. He conveyed that while Lauren ensured their daughters were well cared for, she was never particularly nurturing. He explained, "She wasn't somebody who would pick them up and cuddle them often, but she also didn't spank or harm them. She cried a lot, and she often couldn't say why." Graham disclosed during the interview that Lauren had mentioned twice the idea of doing something to their children, but she had consistently sought help, reaching out to her psychologist or a doctor. During one moment of distress in May of 2019, Lauren expressed feeling like she could do something to the babies without specifying. Graham attempted to comfort her, eventually involving her mother in the conversation. Despite their efforts, Lauren didn't respond, and Graham suspected she had an anxiety attack that was fueled by sleeplessness, fatigue, and frustrations with the children's sleep patterns. Although things improved temporarily, in July of 2021, as the couple prepared to move, Lauren broke down again. This time she mentioned making an end to it all by sedating the girls and then cutting their arteries. After a bath that night, Graham addressed her concerns and asked if she thought she could ever actually do something like that to the girls. Lauren said she couldn't, and she said that she was just struggling with her anxiety. Graham suggested a psychiatric ward, but Lauren refused, fearing it would jeopardize their plans to immigrate to New Zealand. During another incident while living with Graham's mother, Lauren admitted to having that feeling again. Graham urged her to take her anti-anxiety medication, and he said that things returned to normal. Graham was obviously very concerned about his wife's well-being, but she had been taking a proactive approach to her mental health. Whenever she had these feelings or thoughts, she booked an appointment with the doctor. Graham never thought in a million years that she would ever actually harm herself or the girls. After Lauren was charged with the murder of her three girls, she made an appearance in court. She was escorted into the courtroom by two police officers, donning a hooded sweatshirt and black trousers. She appeared to be calm and she kept her arms folded to her chest, with her eyes transfixed on the floor. A South Canterbury District Health Board psychiatrist told the judge that it would be inappropriate to remand Lauren in prison. Instead, the judge remanded her to Hillmorton Hospital, where she would undergo a psychiatric assessment. Then on the 23rd of September, Graham spoke publicly for the first time at a candlelight vigil outside the family's home. He said that his precious angels had been ripped away from him in a loss that he would carry for the rest of his life. Showing true compassion and understanding, Graham then said that he had forgiven his wife and urged everybody else to do the same. He poignantly said, "Please pray for my lovely Lauren. She is a victim of this tragedy as well." The community rallied around Graham, with hundreds turning out to offer their support in the close-knit city of Timaru. Graham acknowledged the outpouring of empathy, stating, "My faith in humanity has been restored. I thank you all. In this time of terrible tragedy and adversity, I can only ask for prayers for myself, my family, and my friends." despite Graham's family flying in from South Africa. Their reunion had to wait until the completion of the mandatory quarantine period. Recognising the financial strain, a fundraising campaign was initiated to cover the family's travel and accommodation expenses. Graham took a moment to encourage parents in the crowd, urging them to let their children play freely and laugh, while emphasising the importance of looking out for one another. Meanwhile, a simultaneous candlelight vigil unfolded in Pretoria, South Africa, outside the family's former estate. Attended by loved ones, the event featured a South African song that was composed by a friend in a tribute to the family. The fundraising campaign had also been set up to cover the funeral expenses for Liani, Carla and Maya. Graham then returned to South Africa alone in November, but had the support of all of his loved ones upon his arrival. Lauren remained at Hill Morton Hospital, where she continued to undergo psychological evaluation and psychiatric treatment. She had been expected to appear in court in July of 2022, but she didn't show up. Her medical team said that it was in her best interests. The judge ruled that Lauren's murder trial would begin the next year, and it would be taking place in Christchurch. Lauren made her next court appearance in June of 2023, where it was confirmed that her defence team were launching an insanity defence. They shared their intent to call three experts who would support a defence of temporary insanity, while the prosecution said they would be calling an expert who held a contrary opinion. By the 17th of July 2023, a jury had been selected and seated, and the trial was ready to begin. In the opening statements, Prosecutor Andrew McRae announced,
"The Crown say that on the evening of the 16th of September 2021, in Timaru, Leonie Dickerson, aged 6, and twins Maya and Carla Dickerson, aged 2, died. Now, they were asphyxiated by way of cable ties being applied to the neck, and the person responsible for that was their mother, Lauren Dickerson, a recent immigrant to New Zealand from South Africa. Now, when they failed to die by way of the cable ties being applied to their neck, the Crown say that the defendant smothered the girls with their blankets before she made an attempt on her own life."
The prosecutor delved into the complexities surrounding Lauren's motherhood, attributing her struggles to mental health challenges. Despite this, McRae asserted that beneath Lauren's mental health difficulties lurked a simmering resentment and anger directed towards her own daughters, as she perceived them as getting in the way of her marriage. He cited one text message Lauren had sent a friend, which expressed her inner turmoil. "Three kids has really killed all of the passion and a lot of the happiness." He presented further text messages that exposed Lauren's frustrations.
"During the course of the investigation, the defendant's cell phone was seized and her messaging was analysed. And that messaging, the Crown say, is a snapshot into what was running through Ms. Dickerson's mind. She messaged a friend and said, 'I'm going to start Leonie on Augmentin, which is antibiotics, tonight. She woke me up until 3 a.m. this morning, but I sent her to school, otherwise I would strangle her. She moans all the time, kicked me out of bed while I wanted to comfort her, was just in tears. After some further lockdown notifications from the South African government in July, she sends a message to another one of her friends. 'I can't anymore. I'm afraid I'm going to take out my whole family if they announce this tonight.' Then again in September, Maya received 3 smacks on her nappy today and sat in the naughty corner. After that, she was well behaved and sweet as honey. So discipline is not necessarily a bad thing at their age. They know they are sometimes little
f***s." Prosecutor McRae admitted that Lauren struggled mentally. He said she still knew what she was doing, knew that it was wrong, and that she intended to kill her daughters. He underscored Lauren's belief that her daughters had ruined her life, fueling her anger as she perceived them favouring their father over her. It became apparent during the opening statements that Lauren had been thinking about killing the girls for quite some time. She had searched for information online about how to overdose children, and had made references to murder in text messages to friends. However, these friends always took it in a joking manner. For example, when the family were in quarantine, Lauren had texted a friend. "He, as in God, knows that we might commit murder in that small room over those 2 weeks." Prosecutor McRae informed the jury that following Lauren's arrest, she provided a comprehensive and detailed confession to the 3 murders. Lauren recounted that after Graham left to meet with colleagues, the girl's behaviour became unruly. She was frustrated as she remarked, "They don't listen to me at all. I think that's one thing lockdown has taught me. I don't know my kids at all." Describing them as wild, Lauren said that they were jumping on the couch and ignoring her instructions. She told detectives that something within her was triggered. According to Lauren, stress had been building up since their move to New Zealand, and this was exacerbated by immigration requests for additional medical information about Carla's cleft palate and her own mental health. Feeling overwhelmed, she said she even lacked the strength to make the children's school lunches each morning. Upon being triggered, Lauren said she went into the garage and retrieved zip ties. She then gathered Liani, Carla, and Maya in one of the bedrooms and told them they were going to make necklaces with the zip ties. She then told them, "Mummy's very sick and she's going to die. I can't leave you behind because I don't know who's going to look after you." Lauren then systematically asphyxiated each girl, starting with Carla, then Liani, and finally Maya. Lauren explained to detectives that she began with Carla, the first twin, as she had been really, really horrible to her lately. She also mentioned that Liani had fought back, stating in a blunt tone, "The oldest one was very angry, and she wanted to know why I'm doing this to them, because I'm the best mum, and she loved me." However, at that point, the girls weren't dead yet. Lauren recounted that she proceeded to smother each one with a towel and their own blankets. Afterwards, Lauren said that she went to take her own life. She ingested tramadol and made an attempt to cut her arm with a blunt knife, resulting in only a superficial wound. Despite taking more pills, Lauren didn't succeed in her suicide attempt. In her interview, Lauren shared that when she woke up, she was in shock and surprised to be alive. During defense attorney Karen Beaton's opening statements, she portrayed her client as a loving mother who had faced challenging periods in her life. She emphasized that Lauren was not inherently a bad person.
Lauren Dickerson was a loving mother and wife. She loved Liane, Maya and Carla very much, and yet she killed them. And as you've just heard, it was violent and it was prolonged. But afterwards, she put her girls in their beds, she tucked them in with their soft toys, she covered them up with their blankets, and then she took an overdose of pills trying to kill herself. But she failed.
Defense attorney Beaton argued that Lauren was experiencing a severe mental breakdown at the time of the murders, and rejected the prosecution's version of events and motives. She also challenged the notion that if Lauren simply wanted more time with her husband, she would have taken her life only. According to the defense, Lauren, in her deeply troubled state, believed that when she decided to end her own life, she had to take the girls with her. The defense attorney also disclosed that Lauren had confided in Graham and doctors about previous thoughts of harming her daughters. Defense attorney Beaton concluded with a tragic acknowledgement. But tragically, no one realised how unwell she was until it was too late. Today's episode of Morbidology is sponsored by Printful, your go-to for turning ideas into real products hassle-free. If you've got designs, they've got the solution. Just upload your creations and they take care of the printing, packing, and shipping. Whether it's cool clothes, accessories, or home decor, Printful makes sure your stuff looks amazing. What's awesome about Printful? No stress about inventory or paying up front. You only pay when you sell, making it super friendly for any business size. Plus, their global network ensures your products get to customers worldwide, right on time. Get on board with Printful and bring your ideas to life without the fuss. To get started today, just head on over to printful.com/a/morbidology, or just click the link in my show notes. The first witness in the trial was Graham, who testified via video link from South Africa, as he didn't want to return to New Zealand. He provided insights into Lauren's mental health struggles, revealing that she had previously mentioned thoughts of harming the girls. Despite being aware of Lauren's problems, Graham never believed that she was actually capable of hurting the girls. Graham revealed that when he returned to his mother's home after the murder, he discovered 3 zip ties hanging in the cupboard. He described Lauren as a non-violent person, and explained that after expressing concerns about hurting the girls, she had sought help from a doctor. By the next morning, she appeared to be back to normal. Graham attributed her comments to anxiety attacks and said, "If I suspected that anything like this could happen, I would never have even come to New Zealand." During cross-examination by defense attorney Anne Tui, Graham was questioned about why he didn't take more action. Defense attorney Tui clarified that the defense did not place blame on Graham for the events.
"I want to start by acknowledging your loss, Mr. Dickerson, and how difficult evidence has been for you. It is not the defence case that you are to blame in any respect for what happened."
The defence attorney acknowledged Lauren's struggles before the move, citing her weight loss and frequent crying. Graham replied and said he believed that Lauren's anxieties were responsible for her emotional state, and thought that moving to New Zealand, a safer country, would alleviate those anxieties. One of the main things that appeared to be causing Lauren stress was the unrest that had broken out in various parts of South Africa. Following Graham's testimony, the prosecution entered various text messages from Lauren into evidence. The purpose was to prove that Lauren felt resentment and anger towards her children, and had done so for some time. In one conversation, Lauren was asked by a friend about a Netflix show that she was watching. Lauren had replied, "Very good. Otherwise, I'm trying not to murder the twins." In another text message, Lauren touched on her outbursts, telling a friend, "It feels like my fuse is so short. I want to explode over the smallest things." She told her friends that she regularly wanted to smack the girls, but she was stopped by Graham. During a discussion about a couple she knew who'd divorced, Lauren had said she would rather divorce her children. She then added, "I wish I could give them back and start over. I would decide differently." In another text message, Lauren had said she was afraid that one day she would smack Leanne too hard. In another, she expressed, "Leanne kept me awake until 3 a.m, but I sent her to school. Otherwise, I would strangle her. She moans all the fucking time." In various text messages, Lauren questioned how other parents seemed to make it look so easy when she was really struggling. Just the night before the girls were killed, Lauren had texted a friend, "Our kids are driving us crazy. They're wild, cheeky, and disobedient. Graham and I are run down." The testimony about Lauren's ominous searches were also presented to the jury. She had researched terms such as most effective overdoses in children, drugs to overdose kids, and common culprits of medication overdose in children. The most recent search was just a month before Lauren killed Leanne, Carla, and Maya. The testimony then shifted to Lauren's frame of mind at the time of the murders. The defense said that all of the defense experts agreed that there was an altruistic motivation, meaning that Lauren had killed the girls out of love. Dr. Susan Hatters had interviewed her over the course of 4 days and testified. She said caring for her children was the hardest thing she'd ever done, and she found managed isolation overwhelming. The psychiatrist said that Lauren had ongoing thoughts about hurting her children, and that these thoughts were her own. She noted that Lauren had a profound sense of hopelessness, and shared an intense fear and worry that something bad was going to happen to her or her husband. She testified, for example, that they would get cancer or die in a car accident. Her thoughts of harming the children were in that context. It was Dr. Hatters Friedman's opinion that Lauren didn't grasp the full extent of the situation, that she was delusional and psychotic, and that she should be considered not guilty by reason of insanity.
Dr. Lauren Dickerson was laboring under a disease of the mind to such an extent that it rendered her incapable of knowing that her acts were morally wrong.
Two more defense experts agreed with the conclusion that Lauren wasn't legally responsible for the 3 murders. The next expert witness was Dr. Eric Monasterio, a forensic psychiatrist who had interviewed Lauren after her arrest. Lauren told him that she couldn't form a connection with her 3 daughters and often felt underappreciated by them. She said that when Graham focused on the girls, she felt alienated. It was Dr. Monasterio's opinion that Lauren didn't meet the threshold for insanity and that she wasn't experiencing psychosis or delusions at the time of the murders. He further said that Lauren wasn't suffering from postpartum depression at the time, but that she was depressed. The prosecution also called on forensic psychiatrist Dr. Simone McLeavy, who said Lauren intended on Leanne, Carla and Maya dying, and that she was fully aware of her actions. She said that any altruistic motivations were formed by control and anger at the prospect of another woman raising her children if she just killed herself.
She recalled an, quote, out-of-body experience, like I was up above. End quote. At no point in time did she reconsider what she was doing, explaining, quote, they would have known what I did. Any altruistic motivation was, in my opinion, fueled more so by a need for control and anger.
She agreed with the other prosecution expert that Lauren didn't meet the threshold for insanity. Following their testimony, the trial was complete. During closing arguments, Prosecutor McGray said that while Lauren was significantly unwell with her depression, her condition wasn't bad enough to have the defense of insanity. He maintained that Lauren had killed Leanne, Carla and Maya out of anger and a need for control over her family.
She acted methodically and purposefully, perhaps even clinically in what she did.
He also said she knew what she was doing and the consequences, but still didn't contemplate stopping. She went as far as to smother them when she saw that they were still breathing, after she had asphyxiated them with zip ties. He said to the jury, once she started doing what she was doing to the girls, there was no turning back. The Crown say she was not insane. She was not so unwell that she didn't know her actions were morally wrong. During her closing arguments, defense attorney Beaton said that there was no way Lauren's actions were murder. Rather, they were the actions of a deeply unwell woman who couldn't bear to live another day and decided to die to protect her children by taking them with her.
Lauren was so deep into depression, so removed from actual reality and disordered in her thinking, that she decided to die to take her daughters with her.
She further announced, her beautiful girls, who she loved so much. The deaths don't have anything to do with anger or resentment, and have everything to do with a severe mental illness. The crux of the case truly hinged on whether or not the jury believed that Lauren was insane at the time of the murders. They had been given multiple polarizing portrayals by defense experts and prosecution experts. They had 4 final options. Guilty of murder. Guilty of the lesser alternative of infanticide. Murder not guilty on account of insanity. And infanticide not guilty on account of insanity. The jury were then sent off to deliberate, and they returned to court the next day to deliver their verdict. Lauren Dickerson was found guilty of the murders of Leanne, Carla, and Maya. The jury had not reached a unanimous vote, voting 11-1 for a conviction, a split which is allowed under New Zealand law. Lauren showed no emotion as the verdict was announced, but as she left court that afternoon, she could be seen quietly crying. In the wake of the verdict, Lauren's parents issued a statement which read, "We would like to encourage families and individuals around the world to be aware of the symptoms of postpartum depression as early as possible, both for yourselves as well as close family and friends around you." In October, Lauren provided a statement and thanked people for supporting her. While she was convicted, many people felt that the verdict was wrong, and that Lauren had been suffering from postpartum depression, something that's widely misunderstood even today. She said that she slept with three teddy bears that had her children's names embroidered on the feet. She wrote, "I sleep with the teddy bears at night, to hold them close and remember all the wonderful cuddles my girls used to give me." Lauren Dickerson is currently awaiting sentencing, and she's looking at a sentence of life in prison. While Lauren Dickerson awaits her impending sentence, the public discourse surrounding her culpability remains sharply divided. On one side, she is painted as a remorseless child killer, driven by a sinister desire to seize control within her own family dynamic. On the opposing front, a contrasting narrative unfolds, one that casts Lauren as a tragic victim ensnared by the clutches of postpartum depression, a mental health struggle that persists in being widely misunderstood and stigmatized. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my newest supporters up on Patreon, Dominic, Michelle, and Peggy. You can join us up on Patreon for as little as $1 a month, and there are absolutely no obligations. You can cancel your subscription anytime. I upload ad-free and early release episodes behind the scenes, and I also send out a handwritten thank you note along with some Patreon exclusive merch. So if you'd like to join us up on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. If you'd like to support the show in another way, please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Ratings and reviews are a super easy way to support a show that you like, and I genuinely do appreciate the feedback. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.